creative. It was, again, it was gutsy calls, and it was taking shots and, you know, taking chances. And he talked to me about the tone of the piece, which intrigued me, and the fact that it wasn't campy really intrigued me. You know, so I was real fortunate. Yeah, I was real lucky.
Had you seen Beetlejuice before you accepted Batman?
No. Mm-hmm. No. Okay.
Were you familiar with his work at all?
Just from Pee-wee, which I enjoyed. Then I saw Beetlejuice, and then I knew exactly what he was talking about. Yeah, I knew what he was going to try to do with this thing.
And what was that in your mind?
The tone. It all came down to tone, I think. That this was not going to be campy. He was going to play it straight. It was going to look like a revisionist comic book, you know, and it had that tone to it. I thought it'd be a project that I'd really want to be involved in. I thought, you know, this is a chance to go and do something that might be real special. It's going to, you know, time and time for years from now. I mean, people will reflect on this and say, yeah, that was real, you know.
But did you also sense it could go the other way, that it could cross the line and become, let's say it could have become a joke in future years? I mean, people would refer to Batman as a failed thing because there was so much.
But ambition. You're referring to it on a corporate level, I think, more than you are as far as an artistic level. I think that's what you're trying to tell me, right?
Okay, yeah.
No, on an artistic level, no, I don't think so. I think, again, if five people are going to paint a bowl of fruit, they're going to paint that bowl of fruit five different ways. Now, some will be more commercial than others, but the artistic standpoint of it is more intriguing to me, the take on it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, you know, my roommate in college was Julian Schnabel. Think of this one now. So, no, it's true. And he would paint stuff, and I'd look at this stuff and go, yeah, okay, you know. And yeah, exactly. But this is true. But I learned a lot from him, you know. And it's like, it's from a number of levels. But he, again, it's a different take. Whereas, you know, Leroy Neiman, at the time, were selling for, you know, the commercial level, and you knew what you got, and it's real good there. Here was somebody doing something different, and some people went, what the hell is this thing? But he says, watch. And he had total belief in that. So I think you have to go in with that belief, that passion that he has, and that Tim Burton has going in. So, I mean, I don't know if I answered that question correctly or what.
Some months ago on Larry King, I think you had just returned from shooting your portions of it.
Yeah.
You talked with him so enthusiastically about the film. You may have done more to sell that film in advance at that time than anybody, but you seem to have a real grip then on what the thing would look like, the tone of it.
Yeah.
Is that unusual that an actor would have such a full view of what the thing would be, even before you'd seen any of the work?
We'd seen dailies, and that's all it really took was to see dailies and just be a part of that whole scene. I mean, Gotham City, the whole way they built the thing up, the whole look of this thing, Anton Furst, the sets, the whole take of it, the whole attitude, the professionalism that went involved in it. I mean, you had really great craftsmen, great professionals. These people you're working with were all high. To work with Pat Hingle. I mean, to be able to talk with Pat Hingle, it's not like I have to talk, you know, it's like he talks about Actor's Studio and how he talks to me about, you know, doing scene work with Marilyn Monroe. And I knew that would be part of it. And, you know, when you have this kind of caliber of people joined together in this great mix and you're trying to do something that's really going to be out there one way or another, you know, it's going to be out there. I mean, that's very exciting. So I had the idea of the tone and what the whole experience was going to be. Yeah.
We've read a lot about how uncomfortable the bat suit was to work in and things like that.
You should have seen how tough it was to make love in. I got to tell you something. It's like nothing compared to...
Well, that's what I was leading to. How did you and Michael get along? You know, you're both pretty much known as real live wire funny guys.
First from years and years ago when we both stand-up comics. Mm-hmm. And Michael's a terrific actor. I didn't have that. In fact, Michael used to come over to my place where I was staying to visit my wife, who he had known also when she used to work at the Improvisation some years ago.
Yeah.
And I've never had any of that. We used to talk sports too. We'd have a lot of. He's a big Pittsburgh, Steeler fan. This was during football season, mm-hmm. And I had the pleasure of being a New York Jet fan. So this is very tough. So, no, we talked sports a lot. In fact, the first day on the set, I gave him a great gift. He, being a big Pirate fan, I gave him a 6-foot poster I had mounted of Roberto Clemente. And I knew he'd go nuts over that. I knew that was a great gift for Michael. No, not at all. So we talk about acting. We went out together a couple of times. He and I and Jack went to the Hard Rock Cafe one night, which was fun. You know, going out with Jack, this is a good person to hang with. This is a good man to hang with, boy. It is amazing. I mean, this dude, there's, you know.
In what way?
Oh, man. I mean, you're hanging with Jack, first of all. I mean, it's like, I mean, he has, the world is his entourage. It's like being with Babe Ruth. It's the only comparison when I was with my son. I imagine how Babe, it was like traveling with the Babe or something like that. Because he's like, everybody loves the guy. He transcends everything. He goes from grandmothers to Hell's Angels guys, motorcycle guys, to housewives, to tourists. Everybody loves Jack, you know? And so it's like, it's fun. It's like the world, like I said, the world is his entourage. It's great.
Not tough to get into the Hard Rock, I guess.
Huh? No, because he had a gold card. So he comes in and he goes, I got a gold card. I can go to the front of the line. And it's just, you know, and see, you know, it's like, yeah, I got one of these. It was like, and that gave him the credibility to go do it. It was it was a lot of fun.
How was he on the set?
Oh, he's the best. I mean, he kibitzes with the, tells jokes to the people on the set. Jack Nicholson is the, it gives you a great secure feeling working with Nicholson, because if he says everything's going okay, it's going okay. You know, it's like you never have to worry, because he's very smart. You know, he's a brilliant guy. He's brilliant as far as his knowledge of film. The first day we had rehearsals, I made a reference. We were, you know, going through the read-throughs and talking about the parts, and I made a reference to Wallace Beery and Edward G. Robinson and Jack Carson. That's who it was. And he looked at me, and suddenly we just came in on a wavelength, because Nicholson is, you know, at heart, a character actor. You know, he's the great character actor of our time. When you think of, Spencer Tracy, who was a movie star, yet was a character actor. When you Paul Muni and Jack, you know, these people, Wallace Beery, Bogart. I mean, Jack Nicholson is the great character actor of our time. And, you know, he's proving it time and time again. So we would discuss, you know, movies like that, and just, it was a wonderful experience being able to someone who is a true, you know, the real thing. I mean, on a professional level, it was wonderful. Yeah.
Do you now, or have you ever read the comic books themselves?
The Batman comic books, yeah, sure. I don't read them now, I have to say, although I did pick up one or two of the revisionist ones. When the Dark Knight series, A Killing Joke. But sure, I always used to read the Batman comic books.
Did it matter to you at all that the character you play isn't really one of the characters in the comic books? Did that affect
No, because that's where merchandising comes in. You see, let me explain you something. This is an original character, man. And it's like, this is where merchandising. They said, well, you know, because you created an original character, I signed some merchandising. I said, yeah, merchandising. And they said, do I get merchandising of everything? Or they go, no, just your character. I went, oh, okay. So when those big reporter dolls come out, right?
Are you hoping that with Bull Durham and this, this goes as wide as they say it's going to go?
I hear it's going to open in over 100 theaters.
No, I mean, are you hoping this is the one that puts you over the top? I mean, Bull Durham, you came out, people came out talking.
I mean, I go back to the goal of, you know, working with really good people on really good projects. I was a writer, so, I continue my writing, and I just showed Tales from the Crypt this last week that I did with Dick Donner, and I had a great time working with Dick Donner. Again, you know, you're working with really good people. I'm doing Blaze now with Ron Shelton and Newman, and, you know, it's just, again, putting you over the top is wonderful, but a lot of things determine that you have no control over. So all I can do is the best work I can do, working with, again, on the good projects with the best people I can work with, and I think a body of work, you know, again, when I go back to those people I talked about, like the Jack Carsons and the
Trillium,
I think of a body of work. When I think of Sturgis, I think of a body of work, a Wilder, a Lubitsch, I think of a body of work.
But you talk about Jack Carson, he was
I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. He was like supporting the lead. Well, this is more of a lead. I mean, after the first two guys.
Well, I mean, I see, again, I think you're supporting the picture. I think even the lead sometimes supports the picture. I mean, if you think about it, technically, Jack is a supporting actor in this picture. I'd be very comfortable with that. That wouldn't bother me. If I can work with people like this all the time, yeah, okay.
What are you playing in Blaze?
In Blaze, I'm playing the character of Red Snyder, who is the man in 1953 who introduces Blaze into the entertainment world by talking her into taking her clothes off on stage.
Historical figure.
Yes, there's, it's a girl by the name of Lolita Davidovich. Yeah. That's legit. I'm not making that up. Well, I studied actually acting for quite a while, in course in high school and in college in Houston, University of Houston. Oh, I went to. In fact, last week we had a terrific acting ensemble. I mean, my class, like for Dennis and Randy Quaid and Cindy Pickett and another guy, Brett Cullen, and Brent Spiner, who's on Star Trek. And these are all, this was one acting class. I mean, in fact, we just had the acting teacher, who his name is Cecil Pickett, he just retired this past week. We went down to Houston to honor him. And, I mean, this was like an incredible, I mean, Trey Wilson, who passed away recently, who was also in Bull Durham. It's amazing. This same guy taught everybody. So, I constantly watch actors, and I'm always studying actors. I guess I'm always studying film.
Maybe it becomes an accidental compliment then, because it seems like you have a sort of a natural, spontaneous way of being on camera, as opposed to somehow brooding through a character. Have people commented on that at all? Is this something you have going on?
Well, what's very funny is in college, I always played the heavy. I was always the bad guy in theater work. I was usually cast as the bad guy with, you know, anything from like a Blick in Time of Your Life to like Long John Silver. I mean, but I just look at the piece and say, yeah, I let's see if I can figure out and do a little bio work on him. I get more inspired when I see inspiring work, and I get a chance to work with other artists. I just, you know.
What does all of this do to your fees in stand-up comedy?
It helps. It does help. Because you know, I don't have a TV, it's not like I'm a sitcom guy, you know, so it's a little bit different, you know, because, sitcom guys have that instant recognizability and they have a catchphrase, and I don't have that. You know.
But is that part of your career, a good antidote sometimes to the hurry-up-and-wait atmosphere of so many movie sets?
Oh, as far as just going on the road and doing stand-up? Oh, it's great. It's great, it does. It keeps me in front of live audiences, which is very, very important to me.
I heard that in one of the earlier drafts of the film, your character gets killed towards the end.
Yes.
You know, at which point...
Yeah, but then I thought to myself, yeah, but if you did, you can't be in a sequel. Unless you're John Gielgud and Arthur, you come back. And
it doesn't do much good for the merchandise.
No, yeah, the merchandising is, you know, we're going to have, like bullet hole reporter dolls. And, no, but I thought, yeah, I mean, it's like, no, I'd much rather be alive. I had a great time in London. I learned the most wonderful word and language, per diem.
How long was production?
I was there 4 months. I was there from October 1, and except for a Christmas break, I was there till January 27th.
And were you there from beginning to end?
Beginning to end.
Photographer?
Yeah.
How were you supposed to meet your end?
I was shot. I was shot during that parade sequence.
By the Joker or just by Ace?
By goons, I think, just by the goons.
Did you, the film uses a lot of the same sort of grotesque angles and whatnot that comic books use, making reference to it. As an actor, did you find yourself looking at comic book styles of illustrations of characters and using that to help build a character? In a sense, as part of the text?
Well, again, this comes back to the question of tone. Getting a sense of that going in, I thought, you know, the whole piece, how I would fit into the puzzle. And you make that commitment, then you just go with that. I think that's it's the same thing you're saying. But, again, it comes back to the angle of tone I described it as the movie was like a period look at the future, especially in the newsrooms. I mean, because our scenes had a little bit of, especially the first one was very much, front page, His Girl Friday type of thing.
Roll top desk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, really, I mean, and then you get the movies in the future, or timeless, I should say. So at the same time, I didn't want to walk in and say, "Say, fellows, Noxie's here, you know, Hildy Johnson's here, you know." But there's an element of that in there. So there's a balance you have to walk. And again, I thought that was exciting to me about it, to be part of something like that.
You also took a bit of time off from Madonna some time ago.
Oh, Madonna, that was the Material Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had fun doing that. That was another thing they asked me to do. That was another good director, Mary Lambert. She asked me to do this video thing with Madonna and Keith Carradine. I said, yeah, it sounds like fun. You know, it was like, again, it was good people. It makes it a lot easier when you're around good people. You look a lot better. Let them cover me.
How much improvising was Nicholson allowed?
He stuck pretty close to the script, but he did come up, and again, the organic process. I'll give you an example of that is in the first day of the first scene they shot were the scenes between Jack Palance and Jack Nicholson. And about a week later is when they shot the scene where Jack, you know, electrocutes Ricorsa with the buzzer. And a great moment. But during that scene, Jack improvised when he came over, because he went to Bob, and he says, Bob, you follow this thing, and I want you to do it. He grabbed him and goes, because you are my number one guy. You know, when he started doing ballads, because we were doing it on the set, and it was right there. It's in character. That's Jack. And he did that, and Tim again says, you bet. Again, the same thing happened when, that kind of thing. I mean, I've been real lucky. Again, with Levinson, with Barry Levinson, man, something comes up, just go with it. He doesn't even want to see it. He just do it, and I'll, you know, we can always. And with this Ron Shelton, the same thing happened to me on the mound. You know, when I got the ad lib, the candlesticks line. You know, so it's just great that you know the guys have enough security within themselves, because a lot of directors, you know, especially writer directors, sometime will say, yes, that's good, yes, that works, yes, that's in character, but I didn't write it. It's not staying in. You know, you know, and or else sometimes they'll give you the old, they'll shoot it, and then they'll say, I'm not going to even watch that thing, and the crowd loves it. So I think that's a tribute to the people you work with.
Did you find your character moving more towards the same characters, you want to call them that, or the...
I think everybody's hopeful, so I'd go back in a second. I loved it. I had a great time. Per diem. London on per diem, by the way. This is not the jungles of, you know, this is London. You know. This is London. This is London on Batman, you know? You know, this is not, you know, London on some little Paul Bartel wonderful little film here. This is London on Batman money, you know? Yeah, you bet. Hanging with Jack. Yeah. Yeah, there's worse lies, I gotta tell you. You know?
What lies ahead for you beyond this junket here in terms of press, traveling with the film?
I leave right after the premiere. I'm actually catching a red eye. That's going to save like an hour for the party. I have to go back to New Orleans to shoot plays. And I say back to New Orleans. I didn't shoot in New Orleans. I have to go down. I shot in Winfield, Louisiana.
No per diem.
Oh. Oh yeah, had per diem, but what good is having per diem there? Do you know? That's like, you know, it's like, and I got to tell you, the food there is so good. It's like, how do you want your milk fried? You know? How do you want your cereal fried? No, at least I'm going to New Orleans for a day. You know, that's, you know, so that'll be fun. So I'm going to New Orleans. I do that. Then I'm going to Washington and also with Larry King, and then I'm going to New York. And I don't know where I'm going from
that
there.
That you and King have developed into, he likes having you.
King's a great guy. King's a good guy. I mean, I like Larry a lot. Larry's a decent guy.
You know, you tell such great stories about Miami, the cities that you go to on your shoots. How much of this ends up in your comic routines?
Oh, well, some of it does.
Durham and the cigarettes.
Durham. Yeah, we were talking about the other day.
So this becomes fuel for...
Well, I mean, it's just fun. To me, it's all part of my life. I mean, it's like, I have a great time. So it's like, this is another great story. I just, you know, just had a wonderful... I mean, you know, London was okay. And, everybody warns you about food, but... If you know what to eat in London, they have great food there too. Best smoked salmon you're ever going to have, Scottish smoked salmon, boy. Oh, best if you're into really breads and creams and stuff like that, like, you know, scones and clotted creams and stuff like that. It's wonderful. Great dairy, and then everywhere else, go eat to an Italian restaurant.
Cleanest.
Go to an Italian restaurant after that.
Cleanest theaters in the world too.
Yeah, you're really. They had really mean little women that show you to your seat and stuff.
Get in there.
Yeah, there really is, you know. And the word brilliant comes up a lot. I thought it was brilliant. He's brilliant, you know. Brilliant.
Brill.
Yes.
Brill is the short.
Is it Brill?
It's Brill.
Okay.
It's Brill, yeah.
How did you get involved with
the
TV drawing?
Oh, they asked me if I wanted to be part of the promotion and stuff like that. I said, this sounds cool. Again, it sounds cool. You know, it's a lot of stuff. Luckily, you only do stuff that, you know, turns out pretty good. Again, the people involved with that thing. I thought MTV's, I've worked with them before. I like them. They have a great sense of humor about themselves. The guy, I'm I can't remember the cameraman who did it, but it was shot by the guy who did Madonna's, I think, Diet Pepsi or Pepsi commercial or Coke commercial. And I thought, you know, this is going to look good. This should be quality work. I thought, again, you know, Warner Brothers and John Peters is not going to let anything with the Batmobile be anything less than, you know, this is the real people to work with. And this is a good, I thought this would, you know, this is a good thing to do.
When's the drawing on that?
Is it the 20th? Is it 19th or the 20th, I think. I could be wrong. Don't get that one. I'm not sure of that.
Could you recall for us a scene in which it was especially complex in getting it set up? Maybe the wait was especially long, the elements involved in the shot were especially complicated. Anything that comes to your mind that might help typify what life was like on that set with a special project like this involving special effects?
In other words,
was there a particular scene that you shot that seemed to involve a lot of extra preparation, waiting, bringing into play lots of additional elements that just made it rather unusual? Something you could
The scene where during the parade sequence, there's a lot of stuff going on there, because you had all this music when I have to knock the goons out with the balloons and everything else. Because of the size and scope of the size and scope of that particular shot, but it's always waiting. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, it's just
you just don't seem like a waiting kind
of
guy.
Porridge. They had great porridge too in London. That's something else they have. Really, they're really good at those dairy things.
You must have had some kind of a food wagon trundling around behind you while you
there's
waited.
Certain things. What else did I do on the set?
You'd probably drink Guinness as well.
No, I didn't get it. Boy, can they put it away though? Holy mackerel!
Maybe that is a better question. On a film like this where there is so much waiting between scenes, what the hell do you do?
I usually read. I just take some busy work with me. I do a lot of walking. And, I see, what was lucky about this job for me was, even though I was in the whole thing and I was there for 4 months, I only shot about 21 days. So... per diem, 21 days.
You do lots of things. You do things behind the scenes. You've been a script.
That's right. I'm sorry. I was also hosting the documentary. Yes, that's something else I worked on a lot of too. They have a documentary of the making of Batman.
And you hosted it.
Yes. You know, I did that, and I kind of did some work on that.
Which is to say, you're on camera.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. And then, so you had to go around and talk to Jack while he was hanging.
No, not Jack. But I didn't do that. It was actually shot as far as scene work, and I did a couple of interview stuff. And so that's what we did. So we did some of that while we were, coming on other days.
After playing reporters, it all downhill from here.
No, okay. Reporters are great. I love.
This would be your high point. This would be your high point.
I've been in baseball. I've been in baseball, and I've been in the journalism business. I'm pretty lucky. I don't know what else. Maybe playing baseball now. You know.
We have time for one more question. Who wants to be the lucky one?
I was going to ask you about the fact that you've been a story editor, produced, direct. Do you sense that sometimes when you walk on a set, people look at you a bit differently and think, if I tell him to do this, he's going to say, hmm.
No, again, because I don't think the other people who do that hire me. I really don't think so. I think that if those insecure people don't hire me, that's why I think I haven't, I've been more successful with the really good filmmakers, because because they're secure, and it turns out that these people all turn out to be my good friends. I mean, I'm lucky. Like Tim Barry and Mark John and